Baseball fans, BetMGM is giving you the chance to win a prize every day during the baseball season. Step into the batter's box for BetMGM's Swing for the Fences free-to-play game. Pick any area of the strike zone and take your best swing. If you get a single, double, triple, or home run, you'll receive a prize. Smash a home run to collect a bonus bet on us. Just log into your BetMGM Sports account to get started. Then visit your promotion section to access the Swing for the Fences free-to-play game. You'll score a prize if you hit a single, double, triple, or home run. There's nothing more exciting than going yard, so swing for the fences with the king of sportsbooks. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. Must be 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards vary depending on the market and expire 24 hours from issuance. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us. We're open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details.
Adjacent.
You're listening to the Sports Adjacent.
Okay, I like that. I just learned something new today. Adjacent.
With Jason Leisure and Russell Dorsey on the House of L Network.
We're doing everything I dreamed of as an adjacent.
How much do you guys would charge for one article?
Now?
Now.
For writing. Well, that's a hard question to answer.
That's an interesting question.
Because it could be a lot of different things.
Like I got a number in my head on how much I charge would charge like somebody for one produced podcast episode, but like what would be that number for a writer?
It's all over the place. I want me to try to answer that. Because there's been different projects where I don't do a lot of freelance writing now, but for example, when I used to cover the NBA, I'd go to Summer League. And I would in Vegas, and I would seek out freelance opportunities by you take a bunch of these rookies that are in Summer League. You look at what college they went to. So they went to Louisville or Georgia Tech. And then you contact the paper in that city to ask them, hey, do you guys want a freelance story on so and so with the Mavericks at Summer League? And they're like, oh, yeah. They say yes. And so there was one, oh, yeah. There was one year where I was out in Vegas covering Summer League as part of my job. And then in my free time would write these freelance stories and make probably, I'm going to guess those were about $100 a pop.
Okay.
And I probably picked up over the course of a week, an extra 7 to 10 of them. So sure. I went home from Vegas up. But back in the day, I used to write, like, this is pretty early in my career. This was so far back in my career that Sports Illustrated was still a legitimate operation. I think I wrote 3 features for them for online, and those were really long and well reported. There was a lot that goes into that, interviewing a bunch of different people, really doing a profile type story. And those were probably about $500 a piece.
Russ?
My question for you, so I can answer it in the best way possible, is how long is the story that I'm writing? I think that's a big part of it.
Well, how about this? What if somebody wanted you, and it probably has to be something outside of your job responsibilities. Mm-hmm. So the reason I could write about guys who played at Louisville or Georgia Tech is because my own paper that played for the Mavericks or the Blazers or whoever at Summer League, my paper wouldn't care about that. My paper would have no interest in that kind of story. Another way I used to make a little extra money early in my career is the Pro Bowl was in Miami a few times when I was early in my career. And my paper would send me there to cover it anyway. And then I would contact some of the papers from teams that had a guy in it. Hey, Cincinnati. Hey, Pittsburgh. Do you want, Dallas? Do you guys want an extra story on whoever's in the Pro Bowl from your team? And, 3 of them would say yes. And you'd make an extra $100 for each story on top of your regular workday. because my paper would have no interest in some story about the one guy who made the Pro Bowl from the Bengals. They wouldn't care if I did that for the Cincinnati paper because they don't need it. So let's say, Russ, somebody contacted you. Let's say, see, here's something I bet would actually happen for you. Let's say GQ contacted you and said, hey, Russ, you're a great writer. You're based in Chicago. We want you to do a profile on Angel Reese, Chicago Sky. You know, so that'd be a big job. It'd also be a big opportunity for you. Like, that's a great platform, a great publication to write for. So they say, we want, you know, a 3,000 word profile of her. And that's going to include not just writing 3,000 words, but also all of this interview time. You have to talk to more than just Angel Reese for this, obviously, to do a good job. You've got to find other people to connect with, like in her circle or in her background. What are you thinking is a fair price for that?
Between 50 cents and $1 a word.
Do the math. What's that? $3,000?
So 50 cents. $3,000? Between 15 and $3,000. Because I'm including time. I'm including my reputation. I'm including my experience. I'm including the fact that, you know, I can get this done and I know I can get this done. Like, it's much more at this point in life to me than the actual story. But I would charge different. I would say a different number if it didn't. That's why the word count is a big part to me, because I'm like, you know what goes into that. You know, you're going to need a lot of voices in that, right? You're going to have to spend a decent amount of time with that person. So you're paying for the story. You're paying for the fact that it's going to be good. You're paying for the fact that, you know, I can get it done. You're paying for the fact that the person is probably going to say yes to me, right? Like, I think there's a lot. And I think you're paying for the fact that what I bring, my audience is going to read that and help you push your story. So, yeah, I don't think that number is ridiculous.
Okay.
There you go.
Maybe I should be a writer. I can charge people $3,000.
Well, I don't. That doesn't seem to be a booming business.
Yeah, I also don't think that's something that everybody
can. Hold on there, Tone. Tone's written a couple times and he's done well, but you haven't written it. You haven't written any kind of profile. No. I've seen you write some columns before.
Mm-hmm.
I think you could be a good writer, even though you don't do this. And I've seen a couple of things you have written. Mm-hmm. It's very good. I, as a writer, don't think that writing is some impossible thing that only some of us can do. I think if you are a good thinker, you can be a good writer. And you may need to learn some technique. You may need to learn some style, some, what would you call it, Russ? Just like the some of the rules.
AP style.
Yeah, some of that. But generally, Tone, like, you could come up with a great Bears column. Well, not you, because you have terrible, stupid thoughts about the Bears. But you could come up with a great Bulls column, probably, because it's how you think. And just taking what you think and putting it into writing. And the thing that made me think that you could probably learn to do the type of thing we're talking about writing a profile, where you really get inside a person's story and you write something definitive about them that has new information that people never knew about this person, is because it's similar work to what you did with Cheryl Ray Stout on the Michael Jordan series, on the James Jordan murder.
Yeah.
How was that, 2019 maybe?
Oh yeah, that was a while ago.
It's that kind of work. So if you think about that, how many episodes was that?
That was like 13.
Was it really that many?
It was like 12 or 13. Okay. Yeah.
If I keep asking for clarification, is it going to keep going down? I thought it was six.
It's like,
I listened to the whole thing. Let's say it's 10, just for the sake of conversation. Okay. I'm going to assume you're right, but let's just give ourselves an even number here. Let's say it's 10 1-hour episodes. How much off mic work would you say went into producing that?
Ooh.
Like, the 10 is the part of the iceberg that's above the surface of the water. What's below?
It's like hour and a half per episode, and it was around like 30 minutes or so.
So you're saying about triple.
Yeah.
So about 3 hours of work for
research.
So four times 10. So it'd be, you're talking 40 hours of work to produce a total of 10 hours of content, including production, including tracking people down, for including researching, you know, and you guys probably had another person helping you with that.
It was just us two.
Was it Cheryl or was it?
No, it was Julie DeCaro.
My mistake.
Cheryl was, she was one of the interviews that we did.
Though. That's right. That's why I got it mixed up. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So profile pieces are like that. There's a lot more that goes into them than just, you know, banging out my 600 words of thoughts about the Bears.
I think my thing is just, I'd rather just say it. I think that's why I lean more towards the audio and visual arts than the, even though I know that the written word is key and essential and it must not ever go away ever. I don't know. I just lean to, do you want to sit down and talk about it?
But audio and video are important too. And like there's a place for that. And your talents fit that better. I wouldn't rule out that you could write, but I think your talents obviously fit what you've been doing.
Yeah, that's interesting. I always wanted to know that. Like how, if somebody just wanted a one-off, like how much would you guys charge? But you guys are premium. You guys are the elites of the elites.
I think it would have a lot to do for me with, is it something I'm really interested in? I mean, you throw the right amount of money at me, I'll do whatever you want.
Yo. So like, I would like you to write this profile on my grandma.
But it would depend a little bit on the interest level. By the way, Russ, nobody that I've seen really does a better job of this kind of writing than Carlos Frias, friend of the show. Like, incredible at exactly this. But it would kind of depend on if it's a story that really interests me. And is it a platform that really interests me? Like, it was a big, big deal to me to get to write for Sports Illustrated, even though it was online only, even though it wasn't going in the magazine that I grew up reading. It was a huge deal for me to get to write some stuff for SI, some profile type pieces for SI.com. 15, 20 years ago now. I would have done it for less. I would have done it for less just because it was a cool accomplishment for me. And the platform was pretty big when you're young and trying to make it like that.
To Jason's point right there, that's what I was going to say. You get to a certain point where you have to acknowledge that exposure not going to pay your bills. And I think that there's a point where every writer knows, like, yeah, I'm kind of good at this now, and I shouldn't do this for free or for low numbers. Because, look, people will ask you to take on projects like that and not try to pay you what it's actually worth. And so I think you have to be able to say, hey, this is the time it's going to take. This is the hours it's going to take. This is the work outside of what the finished product is that goes into why I'm telling you the number that I'm telling you. Because at the end of the day, like you owe that to yourself that, hey, you came to me for a reason. You know, I can do this. You know, I can do it well. And you know that the reputation I have, this story is going to continue to grow after it's out. So I think that's the biggest part where I hear what Jason's saying, because it was really early in his career and, you know, having that brand behind you. But I wouldn't want him to do that forever. And I think there's a point where you just say, hey, I can't take less than my value, because once you do that it never stops.
Russ, man, writing profiles is one of the things that drew me to this profession. And I really don't do it very much anymore. I think the last time I wrote a legit profile was probably on Khalil Mack 5 years ago. It's been that long. No, he didn't. That was the thing. That was one of the challenges.
Without talking to him.
That was one of the challenges of it, is you have to write this great profile of Khalil Mack going in for the season opener for, you know, to come out around then. And he's not going to sit down with you. You have to put it together. You could get him. You could get a couple questions in a group availability, because he never sat down with anyone. You know that by the way you said that, Tone. But I made a list. I just went through and started making a list of all these people that I could call and talk to about him. And anyway, the reason I bring it up, Russ, is because I have always loved doing this kind of work. I typically, this is kind of crazy to me in hindsight, the amount of time and effort that would go into this, because I would go into, as we call it on here, album mode, where I would just be holed up in my apartment or basement or whatever, or bedroom, for however long it took to get this done, these things done. And I would not ask how long they wanted it to be. I would just go all out and just kind of create this giant block of clay, like just write it out, write everything I've got that's good, write it to what it feels like it should be, and then find out what do they want it at. And so you'd write, this is such an inefficient way to do the job, but I would write it out to 4,500 words and then find out, okay, what do you guys want this to be? And they'd say, well, we wanted it, we're thinking about 3,000 words. And then you try to negotiate a little bit. Hey, can you guys take, you know, 3,500? But either way, then you're going to go back and take this thing that you've written, and you have to, and I would do it usually, unless I had to make huge cuts, unless I had to get a huge amount of words out of there, do it surgically, print it out, go through line by line with a red marker. Yeah. Instead of just saying, okay, we'll just scrap this entire section about, you know, what they went through in middle school or something like that. Horribly inefficient way to do the job, but it produces incredible quality.
I'm actually working on one right now that I've been working on for like a month. And it is exclusive.
You want to give us
No, there's no tease.
Tell us who it's about, or no? Is that even got to be secret?
I'm not going to tell it. I don't like doing that before.
Story. This is your platform.
Hey, we're going to find out with the rest of the world, Tone.
Sorry, Tone.
If your story comes out Friday, you could tell us.
No, it'll come out next week. I know. Guy. Yeah, it's me. Sorry.
Go ahead.
I feel what you're saying on, because there is something that it's different than the other things that we write. It's different than the standard story. It's different than the analytical piece. It's different than a breakdown. It's different than transactions and hirings and firings. It's different than all that, where you get to kind of the minutia of something or somebody that most times doesn't get to make it, makes it. And you can be, you can use your entire thesaurus of words. This is one of my favorite things to do, is like, nah, what's a cool way to say this? Like, I love doing that. I actually probably, to my detriment, sometimes do that in regular stories where I'm like, I'm using SAT words to describe something in a lead. But
I try to use good vocabulary, but I also try to, I it's kind of my governor on it. Would I use this word in conversation? Ever.
See, the problem is I do a lot.
Times I actually would.
And then you have to, I used to do the thing. I do it less now because I would like to imagine that my audience has grown in knowledge with me. Mm-hmm. Where I used to say, I have to write it third grade reading level. Like, I have to be able to write this so that a third grader could read it. Like, there might be minutia terms of like baseball that a fan would know. But for the most part, I can't get too fancy where it's like, am I reading an SAT or am I reading a story?
But think about you, though, man. Like, you were a gifted kid. Like, you know how you were reading in third grade is probably not what you're describing right now.
Which is why I had to par it down. Where now I'm like, people expect me to be able to use different terms and phrases and be to have a lead that takes you to a place, and I try to do all that different stuff. I can't find the right words right now, but like that type of thing. But it's really enjoyable to be able to write those long form pieces like that, because Jason, you know, when that season gets going, you don't really have time to do the 2,000, 2,500 word story.
Yeah, it's and hard. Because there's just too much going
it's
on.
It's really hard. It's really hard.
Whatever season it is, baseball, basketball, football, whatever it is, whatever sport you cover, once it's in season, it's like a train. I mean, it just keeps on to the next station, on to the next station. You don't have
time. Because you're working on that on days off too. It's not just days that you're working. Like, you're working on that all the time, because there's times where it's like, oh, if I don't write this right now, I'll forget.
Yeah,
because I know you've had this, Jason, where it's like, oh no, I'd kill him with this, and you gotta go and type out about 400 or 500 words because you don't want to forget, because it might not be there in the morning.
Have you guys ever done that where like, oh man, I'm about to kill him with this, and then like people don't notice it, or you got to be like, or you send it to somebody, like, did you notice what I did there?
Yes.
Because yeah, you're like, oh man, I thought this was going to slide.
I was cooking this. So when a pin got hot.
I'll tell you, it's about one of your guys, Tone. It's about one of your guys. I wrote a profile. I wrote a profile 10 or so years ago about Will Muschamp, the college football coach. I don't know if you guys even know who he is, because he has had a kind of a Florida. Yeah, in South Carolina. He was an assistant at Texas, up and coming. He was one of the big hot names at Texas. And then he got hired to Florida after Urban Meyer. And I wrote a profile on him where this was what I'm talking about, Tone, where this took a couple months. And I had other stuff. I didn't just work straight through on this for 2 months. I worked on this like in the gaps of my regular schedule over 2 months. But I went to his hometown in Rome, Georgia. I went to his parents' house, talked to them. I found his high school basketball coach, just tracked down this giant list of people, everyone he'd worked with, tried to get in touch with them to kind of see what they thought. And I had this part in there, Russ, that was about three quarters of the way down. This was not the main part of the story. But I thought, this is interesting, and no one knows this. This is going to be new information. Will Muschamp came up under Nick Saban. He's in the Nick Saban coaching tree. And there was a point where they worked together on the Dolphins. Nick Saban was the head coach of the Dolphins very briefly, not when I was covering them. Actually, I did start in his second year, but this happened in his first year. And Will Muschamp was an assistant. I can't remember of what kind. But Will Muschamp was on vacation in the offseason. And Nick Saban, of course, in the office, and was demanding Will Muschamp fax him something, some kind of scheme or whatever, playbook type page, some information. I had all this in the story. I don't remember it now. But was insistent that he send this to him. Will Muschamp's in the Bahamas or something with his wife. And he's like, okay, what am I supposed to do? When my parents are home with our kids, I'll call my mom and have her fax this to Nick. Or one way or another, she sends the fax to Nick Saban, and it's wrong. It's not what he wanted. So Nick Saban calls back and chews the bleep out of Will Muschamp's older mother. Just rips her a new one over this. And that's a story that came out about what his time was like with Nick Saban. And that's something that didn't come from Will Muschamp. And actually, he was not thrilled about that his parents told that story after it came out. But that came out, I thought, this is good, and it's about, and it's a huge name. Nick Saban, you know, yelling at some assistant coach's mom about faxing in the wrong thing, and nothing. Until I finally started tweeting out about that, and then it got a little bit of traction. But in a way, you don't want that, though. It's conflicting, because I've written a definitive profile of the new Florida head coach, of a guy who hadn't been a head coach before anywhere. So kind of a new figure in college football, newish. He'd been a name as a defensive coordinator. And you don't want your whole, everything you put into that, Russ, reduced down to the one grabby part of the story. That's really right. Just kind of an ancillary part of the story. It's not really about who he is.
But right. every artist has a thing when they create their art that they're really excited about, and it's nuanced and it's like kind of subtle, but it's there, and it'll like expound on the larger piece. And then when nobody notices it, it's like, or misinterprets it. It's like, man.
Oh, you know what this reminds me of that I wanted to ask you? This was in the news this week, Russ. Do you remember back during March Madness in the women's college basketball tournament, there was this whole thing between Kim Mulkey and the Washington Post.
Yeah.
The Washington Post reporter Kent Babb wanted to do a profile on her and was doing a profile and did a profile on her, but wanted to talk to her for it. And this is a little different than Khalil Mack not wanting to talk. This is someone who knows there's going to be a lot of very difficult questions and probably doesn't want to engage with some talking about some of the questionable and controversial things she's done in her career. Right. But because Kim Mulkey works at a public institution, LSU, her correspondence, anything on her email, it could be considered public record. And the newspaper in Lafayette, Louisiana, obtained the emails between her and Kent Babb or between Kent Babb and the administration, I think they were. I don't think it was directly between those two. It was Kent Babb and the PR staff at LSU. They obtained those emails with all of the information, all of the things that Kent Babb wanted to ask her about. And some of that stuff didn't end up going in the story. But basically, all his emails to LSU about wanting to get in touch with her and why he wanted to get in touch with her and what were some specific things he wanted to ask her about and then their responses all was made public record Wednesday. And it made me think, it made me want to ask you, how would you feel about that happening if you were the reporter? If all of your emails and questions and the things you wanted to ask about, and some of which you probably, and in Kent Babb's case, did decide not to run with because maybe you couldn't fully substantiate them, especially without talking to this person and getting their side of it. But now it's out there because your emails are public record.
Oh, man. One, you would like to know that before you make those, send those emails, right? Like, hey, this could be, this becomes public record because this is a public university. Like, that's probably something that you should know before the first email.
I think maybe I would know that, but I just wouldn't expect it to come up.
I promise you, a lot of people out there would not who are reporters. I'm shocked by the things that people don't know. It's
true. You're right, though. That's true. I don't know if I would know that if I hadn't covered University of Florida. And that is one of the few advantages you have covering a college program, as long as it's a public school, where there's like no rules about media access. They don't have to tell you anything according to the media policy, but they do have to follow the government's sunshine laws, the Freedom of Information Act and things like that. And that, like, just whenever Florida would stonewall us on things, we'd have to go through that. We'd have to file a FOIA request.
Right. How would I feel? You didn't do anything wrong. Like, it's part of your job. Like, there's things that I ask people that I probably don't want out there just because you want that to be between you and the person that you're interviewing and the person that you're talking to. So that probably doesn't feel great. But as far as everything else, just kind of like, hey, yeah, these are the questions I was going to ask for my story. And I think a lot of times you ask questions to people for stories, and some of that, a lot of the stuff doesn't make it into your story. So that's like the game. You know, I wouldn't even be worried if, hey, there was something that I had heard from a couple different places. I haven't been able to substantiate it, but like, I want to ask you about it because you never know what that person says. So, because somebody might say like, yeah, I did it. And now there's the story.
If they said they didn't want to talk about it, though, but now it's still going to be brought to light in the FOIA request because your emails are going to come to light. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like I think that's
work. And it's like totally revealing of your process.
Yeah, I don't think so. I like that maybe for that project. Because you're not necessarily going about everything the same way. Like, you know who you're trying to request. So you know you got to do things differently with Kim Mulkey than you would with somebody that you cover regularly or have known for years, right? Like, you know you have to probably play hardball with this one. And you probably don't have to, you know, you probably count on one hand the time that you've had to play hardball to get information in your career or an interview or something like that.
Yeah, it's rare. It's rare that it comes to that. Usually you're writing about somebody that is comfortable participating in the process, doing interviews with you, giving you some context of other people to get in touch with in sports. Yeah. But if you think about like the Nick Saban example, and I did go through Alabama to try to get his, at least give him a chance to comment on it at the time. If I had decided not to put that in the story, if I had said it, you know, this isn't really that relevant, and that could have been a reasonable judgment call. This isn't really that important, that relevant, that interesting, whatever. And he's not confirming that it happened. It's really just that they said, but I had emailed them in detail. Hey, I want to ask you about screaming at Will Muschamp's mother for not sending you the right facts. And then he says, no, he doesn't want to comment on any of these things I've emailed. And I decide not to put it in. But then 2 months later, it comes out because somebody who covers them submitted a FOIA request. Then, you know, that's not really what
my thing is. How would somebody know to submit the FOIA request on that specifically. Like, yeah. I know this Kim Mulkey story was huge, so people are probably inquiring and interested in what she didn't want to answer. It probably was less to do with him as the reporter and more to do with, why didn't she want to talk to you? What was she trying to hide?
That's another great point, because this probably doesn't happen if she doesn't hold the, you know, talk in the press conference about the story.
If she didn't do the
She helped him so much by doing it.
So much.
We all wanted to read it. I don't even really care about Kim Mulkey, but I wanted to read it then.
Because it doesn't, and I don't care. If I'm taking my journalist hat off. Tone loves when I do this. After she goes up there and does all that, after, first of all, it was a, was it Pat Forty who reported that there was a story coming out about her?
I don't remember that part.
Yeah, I think it was. It was right before, it was during the tournament. And he was like, the Washington Post has a story coming out about Kim Mulkey. It like made itself super salacious. And if I'm the reporter and you don't work with me, bro, shut up. Like,
yes. If that's something I told you at the bar, just shut up.
Like, even
worry about your own self.
Journalistically, yeah, worry about your own shit. Like, you should. That's fight work.
Can you imagine if, like, it'd be like if I decided, like, I felt compelled after we record this episode to be like, ooh, let me get on Twitter and be like, Russ has a big story coming out in baseball, big profile.
Right.
Coming.
And like, saying that and not giving any.
What's even the point of that?
That Russ has it a started, shell it profile started a coming stir. Out. It started a stir for no reason. And as a reporter in that situation, I would have had some words for you. But also,
because now you got to over deliver.
Yeah, because like maybe you didn't want maybe one meant everything's not meant to be a bombshell. Like maybe I was just writing a story. But you're probably like, damn, I didn't want the world. Like now the world's gonna read. Now I gotta cook. Now I have to cook.
Oh, man, this better be good now.
I just got rice.
Right, like that's like if perfect example. If the Negro League stats story leaked like it did, and then I tell my editor to drop the album. Like, what if I didn't mean for it to cook like it cooked? What if I just like wanted to write the story? Now, obviously, I did, and I was prepared. But like, if I didn't, now I'm like, damn. Well, now I gotta go back in, and I might not have time. So for him, I would be upset. But once she stood on the soapbox and like made herself the victim, it's like, I know I said in some group chats, I'm like, nah, she did that shit. I don't care what they said she did. She did that shit. Because why do you feel like you have to go out there and do all that?
Mm-mm. He must have didn't get the real the stuff that she thought was gonna come out. She did something.
But that's what I'm saying. She told like, about you should
love to know what she was thinking about when she went on the offensive in that press conference.
And that is why the FOIA request comes out.
That was
because people read the story and are just like, you shouldn't have been that upset about this. This shouldn't have been of that much concern.
Right.
What were you hiding?
Right. Yep. Like,
oh, you didn't want to answer this shit. That would have ended you.
Get Mulkey.
She did.
Let's start the show. Welcome to Sports Adjacent. I'm Jason Leisure with my co-host, Russ Dorsey. Coming to us from New York, I'm going to guess. You look like you're in a hotel room.
I'm at the Renaissance in East Rutherford, New Jersey, right down the road from MetLife, where you've covered some games there, Jason.
I've spent a lot of time there, man. I've watched a lot of bad Dolphins, Jets, and Bears, Jets games there.
You were there when the Bears should have won that damn game after, I think, Tariq Cohen had a punt return for a touchdown to tie it late, and then it was a Chase Daniel start. That's what it was.
That's too. I think that was again. That might have been against the Giants. No, yes. that predates my time covering the Bears by a year, and is much more thrilling than the last game I saw at MetLife Stadium, which was, I think the Bears started Trevor Siemian at quarterback.
Yeah, I'm glad.
In a game they had hoped to lose,
Mike White threw for like 400 yards and tore their ass up.
I'm glad that part of my Bears life is over. I don't have to. I can throw it in the sea of forgetfulness. This is the new life.
They let Mike White tear they ass up. He threw for like 385 and four tuds in the rain, and Trevor Siemian couldn't throw 5 feet in front of him. And then got hurt.
Who was the
and
other?
Then got hurt.
I can't remember who the
it
other
was. Just like somebody's ass had to come in.
Nathan Peterman.
Him. The Peterman, and then the Peterman got hurt, and that they were down to QB 3. Oh my god!
That other voice you hear is the littest producer in the game, Tony Gill.
Hello,
back in the building, freshly turned converted Bears fan now. Now loves the Bears, loves everything they're doing.
Always been, from birth. I was always there.
Well, not on this group, you weren't. On this group, you were out from the birth of this administration and then have come around because Matt Eberflus grew a beard, you came around.
I don't know what you're talking about. I've always been a part of Bears Kingdom, as we say. And I'm just excited, man. I'm excited. I wake up every morning with a tingling sensation.
Whoa.
Ready to start the day because I got a quarterback and we go into the Super Bowl this year. So, you know.
Tone, if you got the tingling sensation for other brothers, one, cool, because mm-hmm. we respect everybody. Mm-hmm. But I didn't think that was your bag.
I think he's got the tingling sensation from his Sheets and Giggles sheets.
That's not what he said.
Well, I'm trying to read between the lines here a little, you know.
No. Hey,
take it any way you want.
Wow.
You know what I mean? Jason.
Well, that's the Bears, interesting advice.
We going to the Super Bowl, so.
Tony, you do have on your credentials as a diehard Bears fan mm-hmm. that you sat in, I think, negative degrees or single digits on the day of Christmas Eve late, so to watch a ultimately 3-14 Bears team get their heads caved in on a day when the stadium was maybe 2/3 full.
Yeah, yeah.
You were out there. You were out there. You
a laissez-faire fan would never have done that. But no, I went out.
You were out there with a layer, maybe a half inch thick of Vaseline to protect you from the wind chill. And Guy was there looking like an extra in the movie The Revenant who might not make it.
Yeah, that man Guy, he wasn't prepared for what was going on.
That's his actual name, listeners. His name is Guy.
His name is actually Guy. His name is actually
Guy. I have an uncle named Guy. Guy is a name. I know.
Uncle Guy.
Uncle Guy. Yeah. Guy was dressed well, but not dressed appropriately.
He was effing up.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. He was a bit too cool for school, and then the cool got, you know, schooled him.
Hey, there we go. Tony Gill and the tingling sensations that he feels every morning when he thinks about the Chicago Bears are brought to you by Sheets and Giggles. You can go to sheetsgiggles.com/SA and take advantage of their June sales. Every week, it seems like they have a different sale going on for something else. So they're giving you a discount. But they'll also add an extra discount for our listeners. And the way you get that is you go to sheetsgiggles.com/SA. That's the link for our listeners. They'll add an extra discount for you at checkout. Get the sheet set. That's really what you want for the summer. It's been really hot in Chicago by Chicago standards.
Oh, man. Lately.
I don't like to complain about the heat. I don't think it's that big a deal that it's 90 during the day. But it has been 70 something at night still. And that's when the sheet set would really come in handy for you because it's cool, it's breathable, it's silky smooth. Go to sheetsgiggles.com/SA. Sports Adjacent is also brought to you by BetMGM. You can go to betmgm.com or download the BetMGM app and get this offer with our promo code Adjacent1000. Your first bet with BetMGM gets paid back in free future betting credits up to $1,500. Use promo code Adjacent1000. BetMGM, the king of sportsbooks.
Baseball fans, BetMGM is giving you the chance to win a prize every day during the baseball season. Step into the batter's box for BetMGM's Swing for the Fences free-to-play game. Pick any area of the strike zone and take your best swing. If you get a single, double, triple, or home run, you'll receive a prize. Smash a home run to collect a bonus bet on us. Just log into your BetMGM sports account to get started. Then visit your promotions section to access the Swing for the Fences free-to-play game. You'll score a prize if you hit a single, double,
triple, or home run. There's nothing more exciting than going yard. So swing for the fences with the king of sportsbooks. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. Must be 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards vary depending on the market and expire 24 hours from issuance. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Russ, do you ever randomly just kind of change up your routine a little bit or change up your habits or, you know, maybe sometimes just to like show that you can? I'll give you an example while you're thinking. I have not had a cup of coffee in the morning for the last 5 days.
Okay.
And it was not planned. I just like Friday morning, I woke up, I felt really good, really well rested. And for some reason, the thought popped into my head, I don't think I need a cup of coffee this morning. I think I'm good. And normally I drink two cups back to back. I drink one hazelnut
and the edge one off.
Dark roast. To put the edge on, man. I'm not a morning person. I gotta wake up. But I'm 40 years old, and I do, when I go in for doctor appointments, I do ask her general lifestyle things like what should I be paying attention to? And one of the questions that the doctor asked me last time I was in was, how much caffeine do you drink? And we had a conversation about that. It's always two cups of coffee in the morning and then maybe an iced coffee or iced tea later in the day, possibly. And she told me that I should really cap it at two cups of coffee. That's about it. Two cups of coffee worth of caffeine, not more than that. So I did this kind of just for the heck of it. Mm-hmm. But it also, there is a health benefit to this. And I eventually, I didn't have anything that morning, but then I eventually did replace it with either black tea or chai. Because I do like tea, but that's way, even the most caffeinated tea is way less caffeine than coffee.
I love a good routine, and my schedule is so crazy now, it behooves me to have one. And 21-year-old Russ is scoffing at 29-year-old Russ, because 21-year-old Russ was like, dog, we're going to wake up at noon. And then we just gonna get the day started and see what happens. And whatever happens, happens. Me now, I'm like, and this is the disgusting part, I'm 7:45 every day. And if I'm being, I'm gonna let myself sleep in, 9 is the cutoff. 9 a.m.
9 is the cutoff physically, or that's the latest you can. Okay.
That's the latest I can sleep.
Well, that was something I wanted to ask you guys too, because it was nothing in college to sleep into the afternoon sometimes.
Easily.
I couldn't do it anymore if I wanted to.
No shot.
I don't think in perfect conditions I could do that. I don't think that if it was freezing cold in my house like I like it, and I had my sheets and giggles on the sheets, and everybody was out of the out of town, my wife and my kids and the dog, and it was raining outside, I still don't think I could sleep past 9:30 at best. I don't think I could do it.
No, I'm this guy. I don't like feeling like I've wasted the day.
Oh, I'm fine with that feeling.
I got just too much to do.
Sometimes that's not a bad feeling
out here. No, there's too much money to make out here.
I mean, I'm going
to
feel bad about it later.
Somebody else going to make it if I don't get up.
I'll be damn later.
Let Tone make my $100 million because I decided I was going to sleep in for extra. But no, I'm being facetious. But I truly think that as far as sleep goes, I couldn't change that. I've changed my habits as far as workouts in the last couple of years, because when I was on the beat, I would work out much later in the day. So I'd work out, you know, noon, 1, 2, 3, 4 o'clock. Sometimes I'd work out after games because I was up and wired. And because I could sleep, I'd, you know, work out at midnight, get to bed around 2, wake up at 8 or 10, 10:30, and do that all over again. And now when I started doing TV where I needed to be at the studio earlier, it's changed a little bit. I changed to a morning workout guy. So I would wake up at 7:45 and then go straight to the gym. And that was something that had to change. And I had to figure out, do I have my most energy? And then I decided, nah, I mean, I'm cool. I'm getting workouts, but I don't feel like I'm getting my best. So then I started drinking coffee before I go to the gym. That way I get my caffeine for the day. It powers me through my workout. And then I feel good. And I don't need coffee the rest of the day. Cause I used to be like you, where I was like, I'd have a couple in the morning and then have another iced coffee on my way to the ballpark.
By the way, those of you listening, we know, Russ knows, I know, we all know that most of you with kind of more conventional work schedules are up at like 5. We know 7:45 is not necessarily considered getting up early for adults. In our profession, that's really early. In our profession, that is getting up early. Because you don't ever have to be at the ballpark usually before 3 in the afternoon, probably.
Right. If the earliest the clubhouse opens is 4 hours before first pitch.
Yeah.
And so even me, for a 7 o'clock start, that's 3.
Even me covering football practices, which are daytime things, you know, I don't ever have to be there before 10 a.m. Maybe in training camp, I have to be there, what's considered early for me. I bet you Tony can still sleep in. I bet you Tone still got it.
Shit. Tone, the one who can't. Tone can't sleep till 7:45.
I bet he's got the ability.
Like, I do. I will agree with that. Agree with that. Like, if your mother-in-law and your father-in-law said, hey, we'll take the baby and y'all go have a lover's weekend somewhere in the 4-hour radius of all the cities we got. Y'all go to Milwaukee, have a nice, it's a good weekend city. Y'all go to Milwaukee, stay up there. You would be able to sleep in with knowing that you have the baby and you don't have to worry about it. You would allow yourself to rest for the first time in a year.
I would hope so. We don't have the ability to do that yet.
Yeah.
But, you know, maybe after she turns 1, maybe we can, you know, go out for just a couple hours, but. I dream about it. When I dream about sleeping.
Tone, you dream about sleeping well.
Tone, you're in your own house. You're in your own bed. And Steph and Anaya are staying at the in-laws. Okay? Mm-hmm. So it's only you. You can make the house perfect conditions. You can make it at whatever temperature you want. Mm-hmm. Nobody's going to bump into you in the night and wake you up. Nobody's going to cry and wake you up. It is the ideal sleeping conditions. How late could you sleep?
Probably to like 9.
Really? Wow. Okay. We're all washed. None of us have it.
We're washed. Like, it's because even if it's just me, there's always something to do now. Like I told you before we got started, like I'm getting used to being spread thin. Hey, yo.
My brother.
By the way, my wife had the best yo I've heard in a long time the other day, totally unwittingly, although she knows this joke and she likes this joke. My wife, every time we do this, thinks this is funny. She was talking about trying to buy a used bicycle at a bike shop, and she said there was one I really liked, but it was too small, I couldn't ride it. And I said, yo, also, what color was it?
Oh my God. Filthy.
All right, we're going to wrap this up just in time for us to witness Kendrick stomp out Drake's career.
There's more of this going on.
He's got a Juneteenth concert
Going on that's Amazon Prime. Yeah. Out in it's in Inglewood.
Oh, hey, man, this is the ultimate victory lap.
They out there.
Drake took down all of his disses on his social media.
That's bitch made. Can we talk about it real quick?
Yes, please. Well, but you're gonna have to help me follow along. So this is a concert that's happening Wednesday night. This is another complicated part of this you'll have to navigate. This is a concert happening right now, Wednesday night. We're recording on Wednesday, but this episode comes out Friday. Yep. So we're talking about something that will have happened in the rest of the world when this episode comes out, but hasn't happened yet for us.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure people can go back and watch it if they want to. But
Go for it.
But yeah, so, I mean, yeah, go ahead, Russ. No, you.
Oh, Russ was ready to cook. I got in the way with administrative responsibilities here, but Russ was ready to rock.
Needs of the disses, we talked about it ad nauseum here on the show. Ad nauseum. Oh, it's one of my favorite words to use in a story, by the way. What word? It means at length. So we've talked about the disses at length on the podcast ad nauseum. And
I got
Drake, weeks after the loss to Kendrick, when everybody, all right, it's done, it's over. He even conceded himself. Right? Yeah, he conceded himself. He took his diss tracks off of his Instagram. And it's just like, that's whack, bro. Like, you can lose with grace. He doesn't seem to have that ability. And I think I would have, because here's my thing. Some of those diss tracks were cold. Like, Push Ups is still a really good record. Look, Family Matters. It would have beat a lot of people. Mm-hmm. It just didn't beat Kendrick. But that doesn't mean it's not a great record or a good diss. Like, he had bars in there. But to take him off, that's, I'm taking my ball and going home. And that's bitch made.
Go ahead, Tom.
No, at least he didn't take him off streaming platforms.
That would have been really messed up.
So,
well, like, I can make money off the DSP. I can't make it off my IG.
Yeah, that's a good point. But you know, I thought about it. I was like, man, like, when you lose that, I mean, the stakes are high, right? And you raise the stakes. Mm-hmm. So if you in yourself raise the stakes of the game that was being played, I think you got to accept, hey, man, this is one of the key point for the genre. I was a part of it. I lost. I'm still making money. I'm still out here. I'm still one of the more popular artists in the world. Like, you're not going anywhere. It's just, you know, the when that pride get hit, he's just going through it a little bit. You know, he'll be able to come back.
Wouldn't he be incentivized to for everyone to forget about this? Is that maybe an element of this that he would like to kind of pretend this never happened? He picked a fight with someone who wasn't
going to do. Not on this internet, not on Joe Biden's internet. We not. I think I'm going to take a phrase that social has used over the years. And Tone, you'll get it when I say it. We ain't forget. That's what people are going to tell Drake for the rest of his career. And all it takes from him, If he took the loss gracefully and came out with slaps, hey, we're worried about the slaps now. Like, make you little tunes and hits and stuff that girls can dance to and put captions on IG, and you right back in there, my guy. But to do the whole sad puppy of,
I ain't even lose like that, but I don't even care what y'all think. I'm on other stuff. I'm in Turks.
Stop it, bro. Come on now.
I like Sad Puppy Drake as a character for you.
Yeah, I was about to say.
He's saying I'm on Ozempic, but I don't even care. I'm in a gym working out, even though I'm not, because you can see my Ozempic shots in here and everything. And somebody, I left it at the hotel, and then he sold it to TMZ, and now everybody knows I'm throwing Ozempic.
Are you going to watch the concert, the Kendrick concert on Amazon?
Well, I'm going to watch the concert. He already barred me up in those disses. I saw it in real time. I need to see it on the concert. What, I'm going to pay Amazon Prime $19.99 to hear me get dissed twice? No.
Yo, my Stephanie, she said Drake needs to take the summer off.
Yeah, bro. He keeps saying he gonna do it and not do it.
He needs to take it off. Like, go away. Don't post on social media.
Don't
cancel all of your features and be like, hey, I got y'all in the next one. I got to cancel all my features. Please don't leave any of my verses.
Yes.
Like, just cancel. I need to go rehabilitate, come back, and make some music. Like, his first outing was a Sexy Red feature. And I'm like, you're proving my man's point.
100%. Although I will say he got off on that verse, but that can't be the first thing we hear you on post battle. Right? The first thing I hear
he mentioned battle, both of y'all too. Right. He mentioned as a part of the diss.
Right. He said, you see two bad bitches, when is you and Sexy Red? And then here go Drake. Well, he was right. So, but yeah, I thought he had bars on that, and that was a good feature. But it's just like, you can't let him diss you about you and Sexy Red, and the first thing you got coming is you and Sexy Red. And then he put the terrible, like, Jamaican British rap, and it's just like, Drake, you can't keep saying I'm going on vacation and not go on vacation. Like, go away. Go to like Australia. You got the money to stay somewhere for a month at a time. Go to Greece for a month. Go to Tuscany for a month. Mm-hmm. You can fly private. You got the plane. Mm-hmm. You can buy a whole country if you wanted to. He got that much money. But like, I don't think he deals with losing well.
And that's it. I think that's like, look, that is the key to this. If you own it, the quicker this will go past. Like, the quicker you be like, he got me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the same thing with, like, Pusher,
like,
right?
Meek did with you.
Right, like, Meek did with him, and, like, what you did with Pusher when Pusher pushed it to that degree. Now, you know, again, Drake's diss was really about Kanye and not really about Pusher T, but secede the loss. There you go. And you came back from that.
Concede mm-hmm. the loss.
That thing.
Well, secede is like, you know, leaving to form your own country. But point taken.
But he should do that too. He should do that too.
Honestly, he got the bread.
Russ, let's do the news.
All right.
Let's start in the NBA. The Pistons fired Monty Williams on Wednesday. 1 year into a record-breaking 6-year, $78.5 million. They still owe him all of it. They still owe him $65 million not to coach the team after going 14-68 last year.
He got $65 million to go away, and didn't he get fired in Phoenix too?
Yes.
So it's like 80 or something like that. Good for
him. I don't know what he had left coming to him from the Suns.
I'm going to say something that my dad told me a long time ago when people started getting bought out and I was really like understanding buyouts and stuff. My dad would he'd be like, and they're giving him what to go away? Fire me. Like, please. I'm going to get $65 million to not deal with this whack franchise that can't win and ain't been able to win mm-hmm. since Isaiah and, mm-hmm. and Ben Wallace and Sheed and all of them brothers and Chauncey Billups and Rip. I'm cool. Like, you know what? Whatever. I don't even care.
I think it's a win for him.
And then Trajan Langdon gets to hire his guy. Like, I think it works out for everybody.
Well, I mean, I think this is bad for Monty. Detroit, as young as they are talented. They have young pieces, and it's universally accepted around the league that they have the young pieces necessary to build something. The same way we feel about Houston, right? People are feeling about Detroit, but there's something about Monty and the way he coaches that is not hitting with young up and coming talent and veteran talent, because Phoenix was filled with talent. They worked their way up and then they were like, nah, we good. Like, I think that, I mean, same thing with New Orleans. Like, there's something going wrong with how he chooses to go about the job that isn't connecting with players. So if you're not connecting with the veterans and you can't connect with the young players, where is he going to go?
Who are you connecting with?
Right, who are you connecting with? Where are you going to go? Also, when you know, it's kind of messed up they fired him on Juneteenth.
Now you got. Now you can get the discrimination lawsuit off.
For $65 million already, though.
Jay, let us make this joke. Just sit out. You can get the discrimination lawsuit. Wait, hold on. I don't know. It's a black dude that fired you.
It'd be your own. He was still empowered on Juneteenth to fire a brother.
He got empowered by the whites to fire another Negro. If y'all can't see it, but Jason's eyes when I said Negro got so wide. It's cool, bro. We can say it.
Still a jarring word when you hear it every now and then.
You haven't been with the people that say Negro still. You get scared in the first half.
Because it always comes before Negro Leagues.
Yeah. There are people who say Negro Leagues. And then there's people like my man Clinton Yates that says in the old black man way, Negro Leagues. Or if you're Jason, Leagues.
I believe it was the Oakland A's broadcaster that had a unique pronunciation.
Oh my God. No, that was he just kept it going. He got the first half. Cause I remember when that happened, I tried to say, did he try to say Negro? And it just didn't come out right. And it's like, nah, you've been getting that off. You've been getting that one off for a while.
That Gatorade, that new Gatorade commercial with MJ's. And then it was in him.
And then it was similar to like when the Bears fired the weird dude, the DC.
Oh, Alan Williams?
And they didn't give you the we wish you well and the best of everything. Mm-hmm. It was like, yeah, there's been stuff here before. And they just were looking for an excuse to get you up out of here. That's what happened with the A's guy.
Whatever happened to Alan Williams, Jay?
It's an ongoing mystery, Tone.
Mm.
But it will have to come out if he wants to coach again.
If you see
Jason Leisure out on the street, ask him what happened to
Go ahead, get that FOIA request. They got to file it. They got to get back to you in 6 months.
Tony, you make it sound like him and I were doing whatever it was together.
No, yeah, no, I'm just saying.
You see Jason, ask him.
Hey, we was on freak shit together.
Yeah, come on.
This is my favorite Jason part about the whole thing.
Jason was nowhere near a part of that at all. He is just in the know. Being a investigator,
but linking Jason to freak.
Did he say DNA?
Even knowing that he didn't do anything, it's still funny. It's the way that when that story was happening, Lawrence was saying the nasty man.
It's a heck of a feat that they've kept it secret, and they have.
I hope it comes up during Hard Knocks.
Yeah, it won't. That's one of the things people don't understand about Hard Knocks. Hard Knocks
if that's
heavily edited. Hard Knocks here,
the team has control over it. It's basically a PR operation. But imagine if you had them in training camp last year and there's just various assistant coaches that whenever the camera comes by, they duck into a side room or something. Or they turn their phone away from the camera. Russ, I learned something new this week.
Okay.
And I'm going to guess, based on how plugged into everything both of you are, that you probably both knew this. But according to TMZ, Bill Belichick is dating a 24-year-old competitive cheerleader.
Yeah,
man. Nah, Bill getting his shit off.
Yeah. I did not know that. Bill and TMZ is usually pretty good on this stuff. That is basically the news for this kind of stuff.
All right, good for Bill.
Did you know that?
I didn't know until I saw the story. But once I saw the story, I was just like, good for Bill.
It's very surprising details. What was that?
He's done. He's not coaching again.
Yeah, if I had my little 24-year-old young thing, I have all the money in the world and all the rings in the world, and I can work whenever I want to on TV, and he's actually surprisingly good on TV. I thought he would be bad. He's actually pretty good. Yeah, bro, I'm out. I'm on my Bill Cowher.
You know what? With a daughter, I feel a lot differently, about that probably than I normally would have. Like, man, I don't care. But, like,
I would be upset if that was my kid.
See, I thought about that too. She's 24, he's 72. Like, do I want someone, do I want my daughter dating someone?
Y'all make me sound like a freak, man. Then y'all get to come in, you know, as a father of a daughter. I wasn't really okay with this, and I'm gonna be like, "Yeah, Bill, get your shit off." Like, y'all foul for that. I don't like that at all.
Well, I thought Bill Belichick was married because he had this girlfriend that he was with.
Was.
It turned out it was his girlfriend, but he was dating this woman who was reasonably close to his age, and they'd been together for 10 something years. He met this 24-year-old Jordan Hudson on a flight in 2021. So I'm guessing then that would mean she was 21 at the time. And they struck up a conversation over a paper she was doing for a college philosophy class.
Oh, that's some nasty work right there, man.
On the flight.
Elevator music, everything I said at the start is still.
One of the funny parts is that they've obtained a doorbell cam video that appears to show him leaving her place shirtless.
Oh man.
That's crazy.
Bill.
Man.
What happened to the shirt?
Bill.
He just does not care now.
Bill in there living his best life.
That man out there using the blue chew, chewing it up.
Chew, 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 yum, 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 brick, brick, brick.
Allegedly.
Yo, Bill in there with the honey packs going crazy. It was just best for us to get up out of here. Next topic, Jay. I can't do
Big League Blue Chew. Collaboration.
Yo.
It's in the pouch.
That's actually kind of lit.
You guys know from previous episodes that one of my entertainment hobbies is reading elaborate and funny Amazon reviews. And I found one I want to show you. This is for the Hutzler 571 banana slicer. $7.04 on Amazon. I'll show you a picture of this thing. Tone, can you describe this for our, since this is an audio platform, how would you describe this product that cuts bananas?
It's like a wire rack shaped like a banana.
Ooh. So you peel a banana, you lay it down on top of the banana, and you press it down, and it cuts the banana into like coins, basically. Yeah. Here is a 5-star review from the user SW3K. For decades, I have been trying to come up with an ideal way to slice a banana. Use a knife, they say. Well, my parole officer won't allow me to be around knives. Shoot it with a gun. Background check. Hello. I had to resort to carefully attempting to slice those bananas with my bare hands. 99.9% of the time, I would get so frustrated that I just ended up squishing the fruit in my hands and throwing it against the wall in anger. Then, after a fit of banana-induced rage, my parole officer introduced me to this kitchen marvel, and my life was changed. No longer consumed by seething anger and animosity towards the thick-skinned yellow fruit, which I think Tone calls a fruit glizzy, I was able to concentrate on my love of theater and am writing a musical play about two lovers from rival gangs that just try to make it in the world. Banana Slicer, thanks to you, I see greatness on the horizon.
They're doing too much.
I like
just
that.
Say, just good. Say if you like it or not.
Shoot it with a gun is hilarious.
Chopping it with your hand.
Chopping it with my bare hands.
And finally, Russ and Tony, I don't know if our greater audience beyond Chicago, our national audience, knows about cicadas. It's a big thing in the Midwest, occasionally, including this summer. But I don't know if you've ever seen one up close, if you're not in the area, and how weird looking they are. They're these big, ugly, kind of bumbling bugs. Like, they don't bite, they don't sting, they don't seem to do anything but land on stuff and make a really loud noise. They're very loud. And it's weird in the Chicago area because you'll be in some parts of the suburbs in greater Chicago where it's not existent. And then other parts where you'd have to yell over it to communicate with somebody. And they go, like making them even weirder, they go underground for either 13 or 17 years and then reemerge. And we have the double reemergence in the Midwest right now. So a very weird bug that just comes up out of the ground every 13 or 17 years. And it turns out there's a, according to the Associated Press, there's a viral fungus spreading among them that makes them even weirder. It's called Massospora cicadina. And it completely controls their behavior. It produces amphetamine, aka speed, and it makes them sex crazed. So these weird bugs that live underground for 13 or 17 years and then emerge and are very loud and kind of, you know, creepy looking, are some of them are now turning into these wild hypersexual monsters. It is a white fungus that eventually takes over their genitalia and produces spores that spread around to the others. It's a sexually transmitted disease, and part of its symptoms is it makes these cicadas like sex crazed. It makes them constantly looking for it. It's estimated that right now, one in every 1,000 cicadas has it.
All right.
That's the news.
I had no clue where to take that thing. I will say the part about the wild behavior.
The cicadas know where to take it.
Mm-hmm.
The part about the wild behavior is something I can attest to because we don't get them in the city. Like, if you, for everybody out there, if you're thinking of the city of Chicago, we don't really see, I don't really see cicadas in the city of Chicago.
It's not enough trees.
Not enough trees. There you go, Tom. And so when I went to the burbs to see my parents last week, there's tons of trees and there's forest preserves and all that. And on my way down I-57, you start to hear them and then you see them flying everywhere, and they are everywhere. And they like dive bomb into my car. Like they're trying to just to lose their life. They're just, it's the end. Boom.
My car driving up to Lake Forest and back in the north suburbs, it gets splattered with these things.
It's just, it's the worst.
Are your parents mad about it? My mom is livid with the cicadas.
My mom
is like trees. In a blood feud with them because of how loud they are. She's so angry at the cicadas.
They're around trees. But that's been our whole life, like the 13, 17 years that they've been there. So I remember two different times prior to this year when I was living at home, obviously back then, that we got cicadas. And it was pretty annoying because we have a lot of shrubbery around our house, my parents' house.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's been another great episode of Sports Adjacent. We have Uno Mas.
Next week will be the last episode.
The last episode of Sports Adjacent. I do want to say, after we made the announcement, you guys have been really sweet and kind and supportive of us, and just continue to do what you guys have done since we launched this podcast. And we are very grateful that you guys are, and appreciative that you guys are sad that the pod is ending. But we love you and appreciate you and appreciate the support that you guys give us, not only in this, but in the rest of our endeavors. And we continue to say thank you for that.
The feedback's been great. The support, everything Russ just said, has been great. My parents are upset that it's ending. Both of Russ's parents reached out to me and said how much they've enjoyed it and that they're sad, but they understand. And Tony's parents still don't know this exists.
They don't. They don't know it exists. And maybe Tone, that's the way he designed it all those years ago, where it's like, you know what? Nobody knows what I do. He's doing it covertly. Covertly doing a job is crazy.
The way that Pastor and Mrs. Gill will find out about this is when Tony tells them it's canceled. That we've shut it down.
1,000%. Where they can't listen anymore. As always, cheatsgiggles.com/SA. They have a million different sales, but cheatskills.com/SA to get an additional discount until the end of this podcast. So make sure you do that. It is getting warm everywhere. It's hot in Chicago. I'm in New York. It's hot here too and humid. So make sure you get the sheet set. I'm getting my parents a set tonight as we speak because I need to do that. I try. Cheatsgiggles.com/SA. Jay, anything else that I need before we go?
Just watch out for the Massospora cicadina. Watch out for those sex-crazed, amphetamine-driven cicadas.
Yeah, just don't have sex with cicadas because that would be weird. We'll catch you guys next week.
Thanks for listening to Sports Adjacent with Jason Leisure and Russell Dorsey. Be sure to download, subscribe, and give the podcast 5 stars. You can check out the latest episode of Sports Adjacent on all digital streaming platforms.
I'm very much adjacent. For a couple hours, I thought I was hood. But then all that happened, I was like, you know what, James? You adjacent to the mother.
Baseball fans, BetMGM is giving you the chance to win a prize every day during the baseball season. Step into the batter's box for BetMGM's Swing for the Fences free-to-play game. Pick any area of the strike zone and take your best swing. If you get a single, double, triple, or home run, you'll receive a prize. Smash a home run to collect a bonus bet on us. Just log into your BetMGM sports account to get started. Then visit your promotion section to access the Swing for the Fences free-to-play game. You'll score a prize if you hit a single, double, triple, or home run. There's nothing more exciting than going yard, so swing for the fences with the king of sportsbooks. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. Must be 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards vary depending on the market and expire 24 hours from issuance. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.